The views and opinions expressed on this show belong solely to the hosts and their guests and do not reflect the views of any on-site institutions unless explicitly stated.
What's up, everybody? My name is Steve Vandewall.
And I'm Justin Klosser.
And we're your hosts of Cannabis Cum Laude, a podcast devoted entirely to cannabis. We're going to talk cultivation, business, medicine, politics, culture, advocacy, and everything in between.
The cannabis industry is complicated. It's robust. It has a lot of moving parts. And it's our job to help you understand it just a little bit better. So tune in every week for a brand new episode. And if you have a question that you'd like answered on the show, send it on over to questions@cannabiscumlaude.com. Thanks. Enjoy the show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Cannabis Cum Laude. Today, we have the absolute pleasure of welcoming Joey Posney of High Times. Well, kind of, but we'll get into that. Joey is coordinator for the High Times Cups and have taken the nation by storm. He is involved in cultivation as well, and his work, which speaks for itself, by the way, can be seen on his Instagram where he goes by @itsajoey. Joey, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Not too bad. Just living a dream, you know? Just working away at the cultivation facility as I'm home for 2 weeks right now. So, yeah, having fun.
We were kind of talking a little bit about this before the show, kind of what your role is with High Times as an independent contractor. Can you talk a little bit about that role for us?
Yeah, so I've been with High Times for the last about 5 years, and I've slowly worked my way up, and now I help Mark Kasnick. He is our cup director or competition director. And so we basically go around the United States that are legal. We partner with compliant distribution and set up cups. And then we have People's Choice now judging. So basically, as we all know, High Times started back in 1974, moved onto the cups in Amsterdam in the early 2000s, brought it to the United States. We always had hand-selected judges during that time. Then now it moved into the People's Choice model on how it got set up. So during this year with COVID and everything, everyone's kind of locked in their home. So we created the People's Choice model. Now everyone can take the judge kits home, and we have a lot more judge kits available to the public. We used to only have like 20 or about 200 judges for the hand-selected judges. Now we have about 2,000 judges.
Damn.
Depending on category, it's about 200 entries per thing. So we required a little bit more product from the competitors and then moved it into the judges' hands so they can actually have the best of the best in there.
Absolutely. So we kind of dove in head first here talking about it, but can you kind of... maybe back up just a little bit and break down exactly what a cannabis cup is. Like, a lot of us do know, and we're well aware, but I'm sure we have some listeners out there who are like, cannabis cup, what does that even mean?
Hold on, sorry. I couldn't hear that last part. I've been switching my speakers to my headphones now, but it's hard to hear you.
I apologize for that, Joey. I was saying, can we back up just a bit? Got me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying, can we kind of dove in head first there. Can we back up just a little bit? And most of us know what it is, but I'm sure we have listeners who don't have any clue whatsoever. Can you explain what a cannabis cup is exactly?
Yeah. So back in the day, a cannabis cup was Battle of the Buds. Basically, cultivators and growers would enter in their best bud products, and then we'd have judges are sitting around a table and judging. Then it morphed into in-person events. So Cannabis Cup is you get a trophy, yes. That is the Cannabis Cup. But the overall events that we have in the United States now, when it came into California, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, all these in-person events, it's a huge expo, music, lifestyle, culture, everyone being there. That is a cup to me in the in-person part. But now there's the People's Choice, which is still a cannabis cup. You get the trophy, but they judge the weed at home, and it's the public judging versus hand-selected judges. So people will test the weed based on taste, smell, burnability, packaging, and actually enter on all these scores. They get culminated and then sent to our competition director, and he basically gets the top scores, and then that's how we award the cannabis cup.
And so is that on like a 1 through 10 kind of standard, maybe I'm struggling to find it, like a survey almost that they're filling out, like where they rate each category 1 through 10, send in their sheet, and
yeah, correct,
get tallied up.
Yep. So okay. Every person, they'll get a right now in the People's Choice, we have about 28 different flowers. Say if you're doing an indica flower judge kit, you'd have about 28 different flowers. You would smoke one, enter in the scorecard, wait a few hours, then smoke another one, and you have up to 2 months to do it.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lot more time compared to back in the day where you just sit around a table and just get super baked. But like, it went through a rigorous test when you had a bunch of connoisseurs around the table. They would either pass on things that they wouldn't even want to smoke to begin with. So now it's everyone takes their time entering in this and then having that way.
That makes sense. So now that it's more of a virtual thing, is there a like an in-person finale event or something of that nature that occurs with it? Or is it 100% virtual?
During the People's Choice and COVID and everything kind of removed the in-person event. So now coming up in Oklahoma, we're going to have an in-person event, which is July 24th and 25th, I think, is our in-person event in Oklahoma. First one, we're not going to have the award show with that one. That will still be a digital award show, but people will be able to pick up their kit. So nothing in person as what we used to do. Not on the books as yet due to pandemic, more so.
Understandable.
I think the People's Choice model is really great, and especially, you know, super creative way to kind of navigate, you know, the lack of our ability to have in-person events during COVID. How do you get the kits to the people? Is it solely pickup? Can you ship cannabis in the mail out where you are? How does that all work?
So not cannabis, but back in December, we did the Hemp Cup, same People's Choice edition, and we were allowed, we basically had all the products shipped to a Postal Annex type store, and then we sent it out across the United States. Anyone who wanted to buy a kit, they would buy it. In California right now, our kits just went on sale this last week. We partnered, or we didn't partner, but we're High Times Delivery and stuff. So we have a SoCal delivery team and a NorCal delivery team. And then we also have our retailers, full storefronts that were offering our product or offering our judge kits. But when we go to Oklahoma, we'll be partnering with, I think it's about 10 different dispensaries. And so we intake all the product at one time, we create the judges kits, and then we send those out to retailers. So that's where you would pick up your judge kits. That's how it gets into the hands of the judges. Mm-hmm. They would come and purchase a kit from their retailer.
There seems to be a lot of moving parts in a cannabis cup between product procurement and finding vendors and growers and judges. And this might be a loaded question that we may not even have all the time, you know, to answer, but can you kind of walk me through, at least at from a high level, the process, or like, what goes into planning a cannabis cup? For me, I'm thinking, where the hell would you even start?
Yeah, so basically it starts in the legal market. So we find a legal cannabis market at this time. Although I do love the Prop 215 days, the old days where it was just any home grower could enter. But as High Times is a recognizable brand, and as we do these bigger cups, we do need to be legal. So we partner with a full metric, full distribution, everything legal on that side. We figure out, we need to start where the market is. So do they even have enough competitors to have a cannabis cup to start? So that's our first spot, is finding a legal state, finding what their overall cannabis market is. We're not going to go to a state that only has three different processors there. It's not really much of a cup there. It's going to be three people. So we find out all this information, look at the market, and then we try and then this is all mainly Kaz's job. And then he goes and finds a partner, a dispensary or a distribution, depending on what state it is and what their legal requirements are. So we partner with the dispensary, figure out what kind of things they need from us, what their regulation bureau is. So like in California's BCC, here in Nevada, we have the CCB. Kaz calls them up and figures out to make sure what's the legal process of doing this. What is the overall red tape that we have to get through and make sure that it works legally. Seed to sale tracking system is all there. And then from there, it's like, okay, the market, and then we have a sales team that starts going through the directory of license holders, trying to find the best person if they want to compete. And then they basically sign up a bunch and then we come in. It probably takes about 6 months for a cup to come to life, when it starts happening. It all depends on the market though. We've had some take 2 years, and that's just due to legalization. And instead of it being a medical cup, we go into recreational cup, adult use cups. So sometimes we have partnerships that have put that off and put it into a recreational market, which makes it a better cup. So everyone has a better chance of winning.
I just asked one question about something that you said about, you know, getting a hold of the regulators. That's the name of the game, because you don't want to go through 6 months or 2 years of playing in a cup and then get shut down and then everyone's screwed and, you know, you look bad. Are the regulators or the people that you talk to generally receptive about helping you out and walking you through the process? Does it seem like they want you to succeed? Does it seem like they're against the idea? What has kind of been your experience with working with these folks?
Both good and bad. Some want us to do events. Some of them are also very scared of events. They still have that reefer madness mindset of everything of, oh no, cannabis is bad, so we can't give them this much purchasing in one time. So some of them really work with us and say like, okay, yeah, backpack is completely fine to be an exit bag. Sometimes they require it. No, it needs to be in an exit bag inside your backpack, or then you need to have zip ties on your backpack for safety of the children, per se. But it's not necessarily anything, as we all know. But yeah, no, some are good, some are bad. There's some are very responsive. I think a lot of them take a lot of time to respond because they're all so busy and overworked. They're still trying to figure out their own legalization and how they enforce their laws and regulations inside each of their markets, that they don't even want to even touch events. They're like, no event, no.
Scary.
So if we could back up maybe pre-COVID days, I kind of like, I hope there's an opportunity for you guys to get back to the big in-person events, because I was never fortunate enough to have the free time to make it out to one. And so, like, I'm super stoked to hopefully at some point take part in that. When you're there at, like, we'll say pre-COVID days, right? You said you have music and it's like a bunch of vendors and stuff around. And so, like, I don't know. Walk me through the experience a little bit. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with a question in my head and frame it, and it's not working out. So that's the best way I could do it.
Yeah. So back in the day, we're even better on our medical days. Everyone will talk about the medical days of California, the Prop 215 days. You're allowed to gift everything. You're allowed to give free dabs. Everyone would have slabs around. There would be turkey bags everywhere. People are buying pounds. Well, legalization hit. And it's not as that crazy cannabis stuff. Like, can you still go and buy deals and everything? Of course. And it's still an amazing experience because everyone's coming there for the community, the culture, and smoking. So basically we'll have 100 to 200 vendors at a festival ground. You show up in your cannabis apparel and everything, going in there. You have tons of vendors out there either giving away product or letting you test product. And you're basically going there and you're smoking with everything, seeing the innovation that's happening inside our industry. There's a lot of brands there, but there's also a lot of manufacturing stuff too that happens. Someone will be showing off their newest LED light or their water control system. So we have all different levels. It could be a B2B, but it's really B2C at our overall event. So imagine anything you want as a cannabis consumer, it's there. In our festivals, it depends on regulation. Some allow selling of edibles, like say you can have a barbecue and they have all their barbecue sauces infused. You can sell that. But some of them within regulation, you can't sell edibles in that fashion. That's not exact dosing size, childproof packaging. So it all really depends on the market of how it all goes into. But yeah, back in the Michigan days, we would have, at the Auto City Speedway, we'd have literally just cups of snow cones or lemonades that would be infused and people are giving them to you. And you just get completely high. And it's just an amazing time because you're smoking around all like-minded people and just enjoying the whole atmosphere. It's really festival, but everything cannabis related, which is amazing.
Sounds like some place I'd like to be in this right this second. I've never been to a cannabis cup either, and I'm dying to go. It seems like, you know, especially of a cup of your magnitude, there's a ton of people and consumers and judges and vendors, which means you probably need a relatively large venue. How do you go about choosing the perfect venue that's, you know, the right size and who are into cannabis? You know, how does that all work?
Yeah, so that's our VP of Sales and Event Director, Samina Maud's position. She basically goes out scouting these locations, one, to make sure that they have enough parking, they have enough footprint to have a cannabis village. And then they work with city officials and go through the whole legal step process of getting permits, insurance, everything that a festival needs. So they have to outsource this. That process can go for a long time, especially coming into new markets that are not cannabis friendly or newly recreational markets. They really have to work with the city regulators and police departments. They have to go and sit in front of the city board and say, hey, we want to do a cannabis event. And they either pass it or deny it a lot of times. And we slowly have to work with them. And they allow it. But yeah, that process is all done by Samina Maud, and she takes that head on, and she's been doing it for quite a few years now, even before my time. But she's amazing at what she does and what we can do getting through all this.
Yeah, you do got to kind of play the game. A lot of people in the industry are kind of, you know, let's just do it. Screw it. We'll worry about the consequences later. But if you want to be legitimate and you want to be able to do this again, and you don't want to screw a lot of people out of their money and their time, you do got to take the correct pathway with the regulators and the police and the city board, because once you do that, you have a legitimate event. You know, I just think a lot of people don't want to go through those steps because it's tough and it doesn't happen overnight. But yeah, like the last thing I would imagine you'd want to do is to have this banger of an event, all these people show up, and then, you know, somebody comes knocking and says, party's over. And you really only get one chance, I feel like. So props to her for seemingly making it happen over and over again. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they actually used to do that. I mean, High Times was underground at one time for the most part and did all those kind of cups that were not like stretching the line through it. But no, Samin really takes that as a big thing, because if you want to come back into a city, like you can plant your flag anywhere and go in and out. But if you want to come back again year after year, as we have done in the California markets and at like the NOS Orange Show Center, you need to partner with your city officials and everything. And High Times being that big of a name brand, they come after us every time. But she makes sure we're on point as a whole festival crew. There's a lot of things that go into it. We have about 60 to 80 workers on our crew. And yeah, it's wild time.
Damn.
So how does the pricing model work? Is it so you had selected judges prior, so I'm assuming that they were invitational, or did they have to pay for their position as well?
Their kits were like $4.20 back then.
Fair enough.
Medical limits, not adult use limits. So it was a crazy amount.
Awesome. And then, so now your kits now, like what does that look like for the consumer at home who's entering to be a judge? How much of each cultivar? Just curious.
So that all depends on the market and how many competitors we have into a category. So we'll go into a market and say the average price is $15 a gram or $10 a gram, depending on where you're at. And then we'll take that and kind of cut it in half or three quarters. And so if it's a 10 gram sativa kit and it would have been $150 regularly, if you were to buy 10 grams, we will put it down to probably $75 or $100. And then that would be the kit price. So it really all depends on how many products are in a kit. And they take a look at fair market value of what it is. And then we take money all the way down to that. My thing is I want to be a price as a no-brainer. If an ounce is regularly $280 in the store for a solid ounce, I want to make our kits $200. And so that gets it into enough hands and people that want to judge.
Yeah.
So any level of person can buy that kit, because if they were already going in there buying $10 grams, why not buy an $8 gram from here? You know, like that kind of level of buy it, and then you get a judge it and you have your voice heard with our cannabis cup.
And man, through COVID, have we not learned that people love to have their voice heard on the internet?
Right? Definitely.
Go ahead.
Jinx. Well, I was just going to say, so you had mentioned earlier in the show that you're actually at a cultivation facility now. You know, we've seen on your Instagram, you are a cultivator yourself. How long have you been cultivating, and kind of give us a rundown of, you know, what your preferred method is, and just kind of, you know, your, I want to know a little bit about yourself as a cultivator.
Yeah. So I've been growing for the last 6 years as well. In the full legal market, I've had tents at home for quite some time. But in the commercial scheme, about 6 years. I run Coco. It's what I've learned in the commercial level. I think when you go into living soil and doing that stuff, it's a lot more knowledge. It takes a lot more care from even the ownership level of cultivations. They have to understand the problems that go through there and the overall amount of employees you need to be caring for that level of plant, not just the actual plant itself, but you're caring for the soil, you're making it living, putting all those kind of things in there. But to me, myself, I'm a salt grower, so I grow with all the salts. I have good friends over at Hawthorne that take care of me with anything that I need. So I'm a salt grower. It makes it easy. I can train people to run it. So I help run this cultivation in Las Vegas. And then I grow at home as well. And I think it's important that people just start growing. Don't get scared of it. Start with a CFL light if you need to.
Yep.
If you realize that you have a bunch of wispy reeds, okay, step up to a bigger LED. But just start growing. Yeah. I think that's where I've always learned. Don't be scared to mess up. You're only good as your last harvest, as they all say. But at the end of the day, like, at least someone started and tried. And you just keep on learning. That's every day is a learning experiment, especially with all the different regulations that happen and laws that are passed to. They make us as better growers as well. I mean, back in the day when we were up on the hill, you would just dunk it in H2O2 and be done and let it hang and all your mites and PMs cured. But here in the commercial environment, we can't be spraying Eagle 20. Like, we have to use proper pesticides and stuff. So, just as a grower, I'm growing Coco, Hydro, and I run salts. If anyone ever needs a recipe, I'm more than happy to show you my food charts that I use. I don't think anything's proprietary in my world, and I don't want it to be. If I could spread knowledge and give knowledge to someone, I'm all for it. I don't care to be a consultant or anything. I love just sharing my knowledge through things.
Absolutely. I'm right there in that same vein with you. I have a tendency to give everything away. Actually, my fiance gets angry with me sometimes. She's like, man, you're good at it. Listen, that's just not how I am. But
yeah, exactly.
I am wondering if actually if you wanted to, sorry, I was thinking there for a moment. I was wondering if you wanted to plug the name of your facility. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, we go under Dojo Canico is our brand name. I'm sure we're going to be going over some changes. We had a wild ownership ride here, but things are really falling into place now with the new person we have in here. And yeah, it's amazing finally having ownership that actually cares about your knowledge and cares about the connections that you can make and hopefully make the business better. And so he's just all about that. So we're going to be bringing in new genetics here. But yeah, we're in the Las Vegas market, go under Dojo Canico. But yeah, you'll eventually see something better. I'm sure we'll change our brand name here soon.
Awesome.
This is probably a good time to wrap up segment one. We are going to transition into the second part, which is really going to be about, you know, judging the cup and what does it look like as a consumer? What are you judging on? What are the different characteristics of products and qualities like that? So stay tuned, everybody. In the next segment, we'll be judging the cup. We'll be right back. Thanks to our friends here at Rockbox Recording and Production in Rochester, New York. They are a full professional podcast and video studio designed by a radio guy for podcasters. Audio, video, voiceovers, editing, whatever. Mouth off at Rockbox at rockbox.com.
You can follow Cannabis Cum Laude on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Cannabuzz. Type Cannabis Cum Laude into your search bar and you should be able to find us, but the links will also be posted in the episode notes as well. If you want to help support the show, head on over to Patreon and that will ensure that we're able to keep the best quality sound and video coming to you on a regular basis. And if you liked what you heard today, please don't forget to rate and review the show.